anytime you go through a breakup or a divorce with a normal person or a healthy person, you may struggle to make sure you have closure. Some therapists will even ask you to reach out to that person and find a way to discuss whether or not you have feelings left for each other and how to deal with them from here. However, when we're talking about narcissists, this is a whole other ball of wax.
If you've tried to end a relationship with a narcissist, or a narcissist has ended a relationship with you, there are several things you can expect to happen. They might just ghost you and appear to have fallen off the planet for a while. They might be moving forward with a new source of narcissistic supply, and that might mean they don't bother you for a while. They might even try to hoover you back into the relationship with some made up or exaggerated drama, or even a somewhat expected declaration of undying love.
When you're leaving a narcissist, you're already overwhelmed, exhausted, maybe even afraid. Sometimes the logistics feel impossible.
It's really important that you remember this whole thing is not your fault. You didn't do anything to deserve this. Narcissists will never admit that they've done anything or that they could possibly be part of the problem. And they will do their very best to convince you, in fact, that you are the problem. In most cases, this isn't true. What it comes down to is the narcissist is incapable of taking responsibility for their own behavior.
The day I met my ex-husband, I was trying to get my friend hooked up with this guy who I thought was more her type than mine. And unfortunately, he seemed more interested in my number than hers. I wouldn't give him mine, but he gave me his, and after a few days, I just threw it away. Well, then I found out that my friend had seen him out in the bars and he was asking where I was. And then my friend said that she had promised him she would bring me with her next time she came out. Well, against my better judgment, I went out and met with this guy who 5 months later I would find myself married to. When we did get married 5 months later, I remember standing at the altar, staring at him, staring at the minister, staring at all the other people in the room and freaking the heck out. Inside my head, I was just screaming, "No!" But somehow I pushed through. It's part of myself for pushing through. Now, it turns out that was a terrible idea. I remember how proud I felt of myself. Ooh, I got over those cold feet, etc. But what it all came down to is that really wasn't cold feet so much as it was intuition, in my opinion, in hindsight. But 4 days after I got married, I found out I was pregnant with my oldest child. Long story short, he turned out to be a narcissist. At the end of the relationship, I had just gone through several bad events with him, and then there was a straw that broke the camel's back. It was related to my child. I was done at this point. I had been sort of talking with my parents, who I was still in contact with at the time, about what I was dealing with my ex. And they had told me, when you're ready, let us know and we'll get you out of there. But when you're ready, you better really be ready, because once we help you, that's it. You're not going back. And even though they didn't really have the right to control my life, I didn't really understand that all the way at the time. So I knew in my head that the very minute that I was ready to leave and I made that phone call and I said, okay, let's do this, that it was over. So I waited as long as I could, but then I could wait no more. The problem was that I told them and then they said, okay, well, we can get everybody together 2 weeks from now. So deal with it for two more weeks. And then one day he'll go to work, we'll come get you and all your stuff, and you'll just be gone. That seemed like a great idea. But a week later, I was sitting watching Oprah with my ex-husband on the couch, and Oprah was talking about broken marriages, relationships that didn't work. And as she's talking, as her experts are talking, I just burst into tears. Well, my ex-husband says to me,
"What's wrong, honey? Are you okay?"
Well, I wasn't okay, because I was sick to my stomach with the idea that I was leaving him that following week. I ended up telling him that I was going to leave, and he begged me not to go, and I said I had to go. I explained how I had told my parents, and I said that if he would straighten up his stuff and get himself together within 3 months, that I would come back. And he agreed. He seemed so suddenly empathetic. Suddenly, from that moment until the very moment that I left that house, for the next week, he was the perfect husband. I doubted my decision from that moment on. There was no turning back. And so even though I didn't identify this as hoovering behavior at the time, this is what hoovering behavior looked like for him. He found out I was leaving, and suddenly he became the perfect husband. Despite the fact that I was sick to my stomach, that I was crying, that I was doubting myself, I ended up leaving anyway, as I said, because I felt obligated to do so. I remember the day they pulled up to pick me up. He was just leaving for work. I had kissed him goodbye and hugged him and held him tightly. My family seemed a little confused by this behavior, understandably, and I seriously regretted it. I was crying, and I almost felt like somebody was doing this to me by me leaving. Again, I had made the choice to leave. I knew I was doing the right thing when I did it, but because suddenly he had been this perfect husband for the following 7 days, I was doubting myself. I was regretting my decision while I was making the decision. And then the only thing that comforted me for the next few weeks was talking to him on the phone or even going to visit him, which I did a few times. We pretended that we were back together a little bit. We played house, but we never really got back together. And in this case, because I had sort of made a promise to myself and other people in my life that I couldn't go back, even though part of me wanted to go back, I didn't go back. And today I look back and I'm so, so grateful that I didn't do that. Well, when you're going through a general breakup, they say that if you have even just a small amount of hope left that the relationship can be recovered, then you can't really recover from the breakup. When we're talking about narcissists, they do more harm than your average bear when it comes to breaking up. They might do something like a smear campaign or stalking or some other way of hurting you. In fact, it's more common than not. Not only do narcissists not give closure, but they also tend to cause more harm than other people in breakups and divorces. So why don't they do closure? Well, let's just put it this way. Narcissists tend to see people as one way or another, black or white. You know, there's no gray area. So either they love you or they hate you. You're either worthy or you're totally and completely worthless. And as you know, narcissists have this way of devaluing us and making us feel like we deserve nothing, like we're worth nothing. So we're going to talk about the mistakes that I made leaving my narcissist that you can either avoid or maybe identify with and help other survivors avoid as we go forward. So let's talk about that. Mistake number one for me was counting on someone else to help me. And what I mean by that is not so much the physical moving part, but counting on someone else's iron will to help me. Because in this case, I was counting on someone else who was trying to control my life. And that person would continue to control my life in different ways for several years after the day that I left this person. Mistake number two was that I doubted myself. But I doubted myself because of mistake number three, which was telling him a week before I left that I was leaving. Why was that a mistake? He did help me pack the stuff, which was nice. But outside of that, I gave him an opportunity to remind me why I got with him in the first place. I gave him an opportunity to show me that he could change. I gave him an opportunity to hoover me, for lack of a better word. I know a lot of you are asking yourselves, well, how do you know he didn't really change and you didn't miss out, right? Well, I happen to be really lucky here because I've actually gotten a chance to speak with two of his following three wives, because of the third one I think he's still married to after me. So I was wife number one. I got a chance to talk to wife two and wife three, and now he's married to wife four, who I have never spoken to. Wife two and three both told me that his behavior during their relationships was pretty much identical to his relationship with me. And that included all the different forms of abuse and neglect that he was so famous for doling out. If I knew then what I know now, I would have done one thing differently. I want to say number one is not allow anyone to affect my decision, but the fact is that maybe I needed that at that moment in my life. But the true mistake that I made of all the other mistakes was telling this person in advance that I was leaving. So whether you end the relationship with the narcissist or the narcissist ends the relationship with you, at this point you will become worthless to the narcissist when they decide they're all done with you. Maybe you hurt them, maybe they think that makes you worthless. Maybe they've decided they're too good for you and that makes you worthless. Whatever the case may be, this might lead them to do smear campaigning and much more. They like to humiliate people after relationships. The narcissist will generally do one of two things. They'll either completely humiliate you and tell you and the rest of the world how much you hurt them and how terrible that you are, or they'll just disappear and fall off the planet for you. Either way, you know, they ghost you. Either way, you're left spinning and going, what the heck just happened? Sometimes they don't do closure because you don't matter to them, and other times they don't do it because they want you to think that you don't matter to them. But either way, it's almost never that a narcissist gives anyone a proper form of closure at the end of a relationship. On the plus side, closure is possible. It can happen, but you have to create it yourself. So the first step to doing that is to sort of try to let go of the illusion of what you thought the relationship was. This is true whether we're talking about a romantic relationship or a family relationship or a friend relationship. We had some idea in our mind who that person was and who they thought we were, and now suddenly we're seeing clearly. We're awake and we know that it wasn't exactly what we thought it was. It's really important for us to let go of that illusion of goodness, the illusion of what we thought we had, and to sort of be aware, be awake, and understand what's really happening and what really happened. Like we talked about yesterday, no contact is really an important part of recovery. In fact, it's almost necessary for anyone who is able to do it. Sometimes you're going to have to deal with a narcissist on certain things, like if you have kids or you have a business together. But if that's the case, low contact is your best option, and you only deal with them on a business level. No emotions involved. You have to recognize that everything that we thought was real in the relationship was just a lie. It was just an illusion. And it's painful. You're going to mourn it like a death. In fact, statistics tell us that things like divorce are more stressful than things like actual death. So be aware of that. When you're able to start letting go of that illusion, you're going to be able to start finding your actual self. You're going to go through a phase where you do a lot of research. You're doing that right now by watching this video. You need to understand the person on a logical level. And I think most intelligent people have that need once they realize what the heck they've been going through. You then have to accept what you can control and what you can't control and recognize there are some things you have power over and some things you don't. What you do have power over is yourself and your own perception and your own world. What you don't have power over is the narcissist. So the best thing that you can do is steer clear, stay up as far away as possible, and don't engage unless you're absolutely forced to because you have children or a business together. You won't receive closure from a narcissist, but you can find something in yourself that is beautiful out of all of this mess. This is a big rubble-filled mess, this thing that happened. What you can do is start pulling the rocks off the mess and look in there, and there will be your beautiful, bright soul. And you can nurture yourself and you can love yourself to the point that you begin to really grow and change. You can create your own closure without being in contact with the narcissist. You can create your own closure and find your own peace. And this is the best part of all of this, the silver lining of this whole darn situation. And that is that you can come out being a better, stronger, more evolved person than you ever were before you started this relationship. I'm not saying it's the best way to get to it. I'm just saying if you've already been through it, you might as well take that silver lining and run with it.
I think it's really important to start with the why of anything, why it happens. And the reason I think that is because for me, knowledge has always been power. When I learn about something and I understand the basics and the mechanics of it, I always feel more empowered and I always feel more capable of handling that problem. So we're going to start right here. Why do we feel so stuck? Why do we feel so exhausted? Why do we feel like we can't get out of bed or we can't get out of the house or we can't do the things we just really need to do in our everyday lives? What does that come from? Well, I suggest that it comes from CPTSD. And this is something that happens when you are in a long-term relationship with any type of abuser or you go through any type of long-term emotional trauma. And that's exactly what CPTSD is. For a quick definition on the official side of things, CPTSD, complex post-traumatic stress disorder, is a psychological disorder that you can develop in response to various long-term traumas. That is, repeated experiences of trauma in a context where you feel like you just really can't escape from it. Does that make sense to you? So just to give you an idea of the types of people that end up with CPTSD or the types of experiences that they have, this is commonly found in people who have experienced various types of abuse, chronic sexual abuse, chronic psychological or physical abuse, neglect, chronic intimate partner abuse, chronic emotional abuse, victims of kidnapping, victims of hostage situations, people who have gone through human trafficking, sweatshop workers, prisoners of war, concentration camp survivors, all of these things. Well, what does CPTSD look like? Some of the things you might feel during CPTSD might include feeling scared all the time, or feeling helpless or worthless, feeling hopeless, depressed, anxious, all of that stuff. And the worst thing about CPTSD, where it stands out above other types of psychological disorders or psychological conditions, is the fact that CPTSD changes who you are at the core. And it involves a lot of emotional dysregulation, which just basically means that you have trouble controlling what goes on inside your own head or your own heart, your own emotions. And that's something that we can work on together. Depression tends to lead to immobilization anyway, but what we have as survivors of narcissistic abuse often is what they call walking depression, which means you don't really know you're depressed. You still function, you still act like a normal person, as far as anyone can tell, but you're kind of dissociated. You're kind of going through this thing that most people just don't understand. And so even though on the outside you look normal, on the inside you feel kind of broken. Well, when we get to the place where we stop being able to function, I think it's pretty understandable given what we've all gone through, right? But why does CPTSD, why does recovering from narcissistic abuse lead us into feeling stuck? Why does that happen exactly? I mean, I could tell you, okay, it's because of PTSD, but what does that really mean? Let's talk about that. So if you're still in the relationship or if you're just freshly out of it, you can probably admit that during the relationship, you may have become exhausted by the abuse, by the ridiculous demands that the narcissist had on you. And if you were in one of those relationships where the narcissist required a large amount of your time or attention, you may have been so emotionally exhausted from that, that in the rare moments when the narcissist wasn't in your face, all up in your business, you might have just had to sit and do nothing.
or lay in your bed and do nothing, just so that you could emotionally recover because you just didn't have any more emotions to give other people. Now, you may have even found yourself accidentally or intentionally pulling away from other people in your life who required your emotional attention simply because you couldn't possibly give one more bit of yourself. Well, this makes us depressed, it makes us anxious, and it gives us that walking depression factor where we're functioning, but we're not really functioning. Some of the things that you're dealing with CPTSD on a deeper level, of course, you've got the depression and anxiety and the other stuff, but you might also just have persistent feelings of just being so sad. You might be persistently feeling angry, or you might even have thoughts that I don't even want to talk about right here, but you might even have thoughts of ending it all. That's not healthy, but it's normal for survivors of abuse. It's normal for survivors of abuse to have a moment of that. What's important, if you do feel that way, is that you don't take it lightly and that you do something to change how you feel and how you perceive yourself in those moments. Another thing that happens to us in CPTSD is forgetting stuff. We forget traumatic memories. We forget what it felt like to go through the abuse. We might find ourselves reliving the traumatic events over and over again, awake or asleep. We very often dissociate, where we feel completely detached from ourselves and the world around us. We feel guilty. We feel like we're, you know, kind of stigmatized or we're pariahs in our communities. Or we feel like we're just really different from everybody else in our lives. Like we just kind of feel like we don't belong here sometimes. If we're still in the relationship or when we were in the relationship, we may have given way too much power to our narcissist. We may have decided that our narcissist was the all-powerful person in our lives and we must obey them. And maybe we didn't decide that consciously, but on some level, we allowed them to have that power, and a lot of us feel a lot of shame about having done that. Even though it's not our fault, even though we know better now, we beat ourselves up for what we didn't know then, and that's important to remember. We shouldn't do that. Like I said, we get isolated, we don't trust people, we feel more pulled away, we feel dissociated from people, we feel distant from people. And if you're someone who had a really strong sense of faith in any particular religion or modality and you go through this stuff, you might find yourself feeling completely separate from that. And very often people who grow up in a certain kind of religion or people who are raised in a certain kind of way will step away from that thing after they go through abuse, and for a number of reasons that we're not going to go into today. Those are some common things that you deal with as someone who goes through CPTSD. The other thing is the brain chemistry factor. When you are constantly going through ups and downs that come with being in a toxic relationship, and you go through the cycle, the, you know, love bombing, devalue, discard, hoover, love bombing, devalue, discard, hoover kind of cycle, your adrenaline is going to be all over the place. You're not going to naturally produce dopamine, and you're not going to naturally find a way to sort of self-regulate. That is why we have the emotional dysregulation, and I've done other videos in more detail on that. You can check those out in the link here. We might also find ourselves avoiding thinking about things that stress us or trigger us because it's just too much for us. And sometimes those things are things we need to deal with. Some of us might use alcohol, drugs, shopping, gambling, whatever, to kind of numb the pain and keep moving forward from there, or to not feel stuff. Some survivors engage in horrible things like self-harm, and I'm not gonna go into any more detail on that, but it's not okay. And sometimes when you have been in a situation where you've been called weak or you've been called not good enough for your whole life, not only will you blame yourself, but often certain professionals will blame you as well, whether we're talking about a psychologist or a counselor or somebody like that who just doesn't really understand PTSD or CPTSD or the nuances that come and the subtlety that comes with narcissistic abuse. People don't get it unless they've experienced it and really dug into it. And so this is important because a lot of my clients, a lot of people here on YouTube, a lot of people in other places that I'm in community, they say to me, my therapist told me it was my fault. And they spent years believing that. And that's something that's so important to note. You cannot blame yourself and you cannot allow other people to blame you for what you've gone through. That's enough about CPTSD for now. But how do you get past it? What do you do to get over it? What do you do to really stop feeling stuck? That's what we're going to talk about now. One of the first things I would say to you is that you have to give yourself a little compassion. You have to forgive yourself for what you did before, for what you didn't know, for what you dealt with in your abusive situation, but you also have to be prepared to stop dwelling on that stuff. Give yourself a little compassion. Give yourself a break. You know, if you need to be mad at yourself for a minute, let it happen, but then move forward and embrace yourself. And one of the things I tell everybody, which is true, is if you are in a situation where you're hating on yourself, you're not loving your life right now, things are difficult, things are terrible, go ahead and think about your child or your best friend or your sister or anybody who you love unconditionally. And imagine that that person was saying to you, hey, I feel this way, only it's the feelings you're feeling. I feel sad. I feel angry. I feel lonely. I feel like I messed up real bad and I don't think I can fix anything. And then I want you to turn around and imagine, what would you say to someone who you love unconditionally about that thing? What advice would you give to them? How would you hug them? How would you care about them? What would you do differently than you're doing for yourself? And then, my friend, I want you to look right in the mirror and I want you to do those things for yourself, because that is the only way we will ever grow forward, is if we can stop hating ourselves. I know. You don't have to go all full out self-love right away, okay? But just start off with self-acceptance. Start off with giving yourself a break. You've been through a lot. Give yourself a break. It's going to be okay. I always like to say that you can control how you feel, but I don't always think people understand what I mean by that. It's not that I don't have emotions. It's not that when somebody says something hurtful to me that I don't feel it real hard just like everybody else. What the difference is that it's about changing your perception. I change the way I feel. I change the way I see things. I change the way I understand things. And I choose how I feel. I can't decide to myself that I'm not going to feel hurt when somebody walks up to me and goes, you're freaking ugly, right? Or I hate your YouTube videos or whatever it is they're saying to me. But I can change the way I choose to respond, react, and perceive that situation, you know? And one of my best tips ever is to not respond, react, or do anything when someone isn't trying to hear you. If someone gives me criticism that is helpful, like they say, oh my gosh, you talk too fast in your videos. I do know that, and I'm sorry about that. I try to talk slower, but sometimes I get excited. Anyway, that is valuable feedback. If somebody says to me, I don't like the way that, you know, the music sounds under the video, so don't put music in your videos. Guess what? I hardly ever do for that reason, because people said that to me in the beginning. If people say to me, you're ugly and you have a big stupid nose, well, I cannot change any of those things. I don't think my nose is that big, but if it were, it doesn't really matter. I look how I look. I am who I am, and I'm not willing to try to change all of that. So I just let those things go. Those are things I can't change. My point is, if someone's giving you criticism that is constructive and helpful, take it with an open mind and an open heart. That person's really trying to help you. But if somebody's criticizing you in a way that is just mean and hateful, don't even think about that person again. Just let it go. Realize they're a brick wall. They won't be helped. Move on. So when you feel that happen and you feel that wave of emotion about to smack you in your face, I want you to try this. I want you to let it come. Let the emotion come. Let it wash over you. Feel it. Breathe in it, sleep in it if you really need to. Let it kind of flow through. And then when that's done, take a deep breath and then start consciously thinking to yourself, how am I going to handle this thing that just happened? How am I going to handle this emotion? How am I going to deal with this emotion? Feeling the emotion is different than reacting to the emotion. Do you understand what I mean? You need to feel the emotion. It comes, you have to let it go. If you just shove it down or you try to forget it happened, you're just going to drive yourself crazy. So feel the emotion, but then choose how you go from there. Choose, do I let it out? Do I scream in this person's face? Do I shut my mouth and realize their limitations? How do you want to react to that thing? And I'll just give you a little hint. If somebody ever tells you that you're ugly, my daughter's friend came up with this amazing comeback, and it's this, look. Oh my God, you're so ugly. Oh, I'm sorry, I'm not a mirror. Isn't that great? I love it. Anyway, so my point is that you choose how you respond, you choose how you react, and that will help you. I promise you it will. But how do you, like, literally physically, how do you start doing stuff again? Because, I mean, we can go through all the emotional control stuff if we want to, but how do you start physically growing again? How do you start physically getting up out of the bed, getting up out of the house, and doing the stuff? And this is the hard part, my friend, but I'm just going to put it out there for you. Today, I did not want to do these videos. Today, I did not want to put on makeup. I did not want to do my hair. I did not want to do any of these things. But you know what I did? I gave myself this deal. I was like, listen, go in there and find some clothes, put the clothes on. And if you feel done at that point, you can walk away. So I did it. I'm like, oh. And then I was like, well, you know, go in there and put your moisturizer on, get your face ready for the makeup in case you decide to put the makeup on. So I stayed in there. I did the makeup. I did the moisturizer. And then I was like, well, let's put the base on. And then if you feel like stopping after that, it's okay to stop after that. So I did the base. Well, I'm feeling okay. Let me do the rest of the thing and the lipstick. Okay, let me do my hair really quick. Okay, I didn't do great on my hair, but I tried. My point is, one thing. Just do one thing. I know it seems small, but one thing. And don't rush it. I mean, if you've been stuck in your house for 6 months, tomorrow you're not going to go out and like join the circus. I mean, you're just not. You're going to have to take baby steps. That's my point. Forgive yourself for your situation. Forgive yourself for what you didn't know when you didn't know it. And then just give yourself baby steps. Today, my baby steps included literally getting up and going into the place where my clothing is and picking out something to wear. That was my only thing I had to do. And everything else comes with it. Does that make sense? Give yourself permission. Give yourself permission to stop after one thing. And if you really need to stop, then stop and start again tomorrow. Okay? Give yourself one thing to do. I promise you, I know it seems too simple, but just try it. It's the same thing if your house is overwhelmingly dirty or messy. You know, walk around your house and find one thing you can clean up really fast. And then just clean up that one thing. I love to pick a table because when you clean up a table, a surface makes your house look, you know, a clean surface makes your house look cleaner. So little tip for me to you. I hope this is helpful. I know it's not so easy. Please remember that you do go through a certain amount of grief after the narcissistic abuse ends. Even sometimes as soon as you start to realize it's going to end because you're going to leave. Share your thoughts, share your ideas, share your experiences in the comment section below, and let's talk about it. As always, thank you so much for being a part of my day and a part of my life. And hey, thanks for letting me be a part of yours. It really does mean a lot to me. Now, before I go, make sure you take a look at the videos I'm going to leave for you right there and right there. And while you're here, hit the subscribe button right over there so we can stay connected and continue on this healing journey together. I'll see you soon.